Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good to know. I didn't even know there was a Cinco de Mayo song. By the way, I got to go through this. We're going to do it at halftime. I'm taking a quick little mix here. The top 10 best cities for Mexican food. They have a ranking for this. So we'll do that at halftime. We'll talk about it. We'll get into all that good stuff. Happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way, to everybody. How crazy is that? Cinco de Mayo, and this is, you know, certainly, at least here in the States, it's a celebration. And everybody uses as a an excuse for a celebration. I think St. Patrick's Day and Cinco de Mayo, those are the 2 days that you just another excuse for a celebration. And today, no, crickets. Everybody inside their apartment. Okay, so I want to play this. This is coming from Dodgers' Max Muncy with ESPN's Kevin Winter. By the way, ESPN is going to re-air Game 3 of the World Series where Dodgers won in 18 innings. Max Muncy with that walk-off. So they're promoting this. I'm actually watching right now. I mentioned a little bit earlier, Red Sox-Yankees. So this is it's ninth inning right now, 4-3. This is the Boston Red Sox about to get swept but eventually come back. You remember Dave Roberts, his big run, and they eventually come back and then win four games in a row. So real quick here, Dodgers' Max Muncy, I want to play this on staying in shape.
I go to the cage a couple times a week, but I'm not trying to blow it out because, you know, once everything starts back up, the only thing we do know is it's going to be a lot of games in a short period of time. So you want to make sure you're as fresh as possible. And, you know, you don't want to before whatever happens, there's probably going to be some type of spring training, I would imagine. So, you know, you don't want to wear yourself out right now. You want to keep yourself fresh.
You know, for basketball, there's been a lot of conversation. Some of these practice facilities are going to start opening up this Friday. I think this Friday is the 8th. In some states, they will start opening up. And I've sat here and saying, well, that's not fair. I mean, California, that doesn't mean that the Lakers practice facility is going to be open. But in Texas, the facilities there could be open. Or in Atlanta, there's certain parts of the country where it would be open. For baseball, that's a completely different thing. I mean, how are you – right. If he goes to the cage, he can just kind of work on his swing, his timing, and things along those lines. But baseball is a completely different story. I think what's going to be key for both of these sports is that amount of time they have. So if baseball comes back, are they going to have how many games of spring training are they going to have? How many weeks are they going to have to then get into the regular season? And you heard Muncy mention it right there. There's going to be a ton of games in a short period of time that they're going to have to make up. So baseball, completely different story than the NBA. You hear players saying, look, I'm stuck in an apartment. The gyms are closed. No, I'm not even working on my game. I'm not even getting shots off. Well, what about baseball? It's a completely different story as well. And then here's Max Muncy as well, who's on with ESPN's Kevin Winter. They're re-airing Game 3 of the World Series where Dodgers won in 18 innings. Max Muncy had that walk-off home run. Here's Muncy on playing with no fans.
If it's baseball, I'm excited about that. You know, that's really all we can be excited about is baseball. It's going to be very eerie if there's no fans in the stands, but you know, we got to do what we have to do to keep everyone safe. And if this is a possibility of giving, you know, the country some sports with while keeping everyone safe, then that's something that we got to do. You know, for me, it's just I just want to play baseball again. If there's fans, no fans, I just want to be out there on the field.
It's going to be an adjustment for everybody, and even players. Like, listen. What you typically play for, before the Lakers season ended, I was talking about how before we lost to Brooklyn, we were already – the Giannis sat out, I think, three games in a row, and they lost three in a row if you count the one that they lost to the Lakers on that Friday before the season was canceled. I'm like, damn, we're about a game and a half out from the loss column with the Milwaukee Bucks. You were thinking about home court and how big of an advantage that could be in the postseason. Imagine this year – if the NBA and Major League Baseball obviously continue, they go a full season without having any fans. Home court doesn't mean anything anymore. Home field doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just it's interesting to see players and their reaction of how that all is going, like how they're going to motivate themselves, how they're going to get up for games when they don't hear fans. Like, I think that part's going to be fascinating as well. Okay, I also want to play one more, and this is going to be a perfect setup because Maria Torres of the LA Times, MLB season startup, pros and cons of three most likely scenarios. She's coming up here in about 5 minutes or so. But here's Dodgers pitcher Ross Stripling on the Athletics Scribes of Summer podcast with Andy McCulley and Pedro Mora. This is Ross Stripling just giving his thoughts on some of the ideas that have been thrown out there.
I think the one that seems to make the most sense to me would be you play at home, your home stadium, in front of no fans to start off with for sure, and you play your closest teams geographically. You know, whether that's six teams, nine other teams, whatever. We've seen that, you know, three divisions of 10 where we're even coming here to Texas to play like the Astros and the Rangers. And, you know, we fly private, so you don't have to deal with airports. Hotels have basically been 80 to 90% vacant for the last 6 weeks. You know, they seem like they're probably pretty clean and can, you know, house us and, you know, feel safe about it. And then you're not having to do a massive cross-country trips. You know, you're just playing your closest teams geographically. I think that makes sense. And you play, you know, enough teams in those divisions where you're not just playing the same teams over and over again. You know, divisions of 8 to 10, and you get 100 games in, you know, or 80 games in, whatever it is. That's still plenty where the, you know, cream will rise to the top. The best teams will succeed. You'll have playoffs and, you know, we'll be able to go and we'll feel good about that as players. I think fans should feel like they will get a good product. It's not us sitting in the stands 6 feet apart, running out on the field, wearing masks. You know, I don't know. That just, that first one just seemed so inconceivable to me that, you know, it just never seemed possible. So I think the latest one makes the most sense to me. And I think we're supposed to maybe get a proposal this week that probably looks something like that.
So this is a perfect transition. Maria Torres from the LA Times, she had an article earlier today, MLB season startup, the pros and cons of three most likely scenarios. So she'll break it down for us coming up next on the baseball front. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Maria Torres from the LA Times, nice enough to join the show. She's got a good article right now, MLB season startup, pros and cons of three most likely scenarios. Maria, thanks for taking some time and joining the show.
No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay, so listen, it's kind of interesting because on the baseball front, we've definitely over the last, you know, 30 plus days or so, we've heard of a number of different ideas, some of them more popular than others. And I think your article kind of lays out really what are some of the more realistic options. So this is kind of it's a good piece to have because we've been all over the place of all these different circumstances that can take place. The first one you have on there is the play and practice at home. Can you just explain for listeners out there what the vision is for baseball with this specific plan?
Yeah, so as you've just described, this coming up with these proposals, it's kind of been like it's like you've watched a pendulum swing, you know, from one extreme to the next. And this one is, to me, the most logical one. Just because it kind of eliminates a lot of uncertainty for teams in the sense of, you know, they know exactly what they're getting from their home stadiums, and they know the access that they'll have to their own equipment. So just to go back and look at the basics of it, essentially every team would be based at their stadium in their hometown. So the Dodgers would be based at Dodger Stadium, and the Angels would be based at Angel Stadium. And the idea is that, you know, they would then every team, there would be three divisions. They would be split up by, ten in each division, and they would be kind of split up geographically to cut down on the amount of travel. And then once the regular season began, teams would only travel within their division. So you would see, you know, an all-West division, an all-Central division, and an all-East division. Those teams would play each other, and in the playoffs and the format would change, and you'd obviously see some crossover. And essentially, the part that'll make it easier, in a sense, for players is, like I said, they will have the familiarity of being in the surroundings that they're already used to when it comes to playing major league games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Dodgers would would go and face the Giants. They would go and face the Padres, you know, Denver, the Diamondbacks, the teams that they already know, the stadiums they already know well, the people that they already know at those places. So that would eliminate, in a sense, would eliminate some just some uncertainty of who they'd be facing or who they'd be coming up with.
And it sounds like, too, Maria, this would be one of those plans where, you know, we've heard some big-time players, Kershaw being one, Trout being another, they're not crazy about – we'll get into all three of the plans, but this might be more accommodating to players that also have then the ability to go home, to spend some time with their family. But what are some of the biggest challenges to this plan? Because it sounds all great and dandy, but I'm sure there's some challenges to it as well.
Well, there's a matter of fact that for this to work and for any of the plans really to work, assuming there's no minor league season, for instance, mm-hmm. then every team is going to need to have an expanded roster, first of all, to make sure that they can get through all the games that MLB wants them to play. And they're going to have to also have a so-called taxi squad of reserve players. You know, I don't know, it could be a dozen, it could be 20, it could be any number of reserve players. That these guys will have to would have to follow the same kind of protocols, which could be pretty stringent, that major league players and the rest of the team and people around the stadium would have to follow. And doing that would be a lot easier at a spring training complex in Arizona, where there are multiple fields, and so you know they could do split squads or inter squad games, and they could keep themselves on their toes. Whereas if they're based in one city. And they're using just their one stadium. There's only one field and a limited amount of resources to make sure that those people stay in shape. So that would be pretty tough.
Maria Torres with the LA Times. MLB season starting up. Pros and cons of three most likely scenarios. Okay, so we know the play and practice at home, and I guess you could say some of the positives and some of the challenges there. How about the plan to send everyone to Arizona? Which, I've definitely spent some time in the past talking about it. I'm sure a lot of baseball writers and everybody's kind of had an opinion on this one. Tell us a little bit about the Arizona plan. And is this a plan that you feel is popular amongst the players, or is this one of the three plans that is least popular?
I guess to answer that second part of the question, I think it's the least popular. At least it's the one that would probably cause the most disagreement among the players, just because this Arizona plan is hinging on the fact that all 30 teams would play in this so-called bubble, where no one can get in or out without really being without being vetted and without following the rules, I guess, within this kind of bubble society where. Mm-hmm. Teams and personnel and players, everyone involved would be basically living at hotels and going to the ballpark and doing absolutely nothing else. And that's just to, minimize contact with the outside world. It would, of course, make it easier to kind of stage a full season, like a season that would kind of look like more like a regular MLB season, because then sure. You have 30 teams within, enough proximity where you can probably get pretty close to regular scheduling, but it wouldn't necessarily work in terms of weather. I mean, Arizona's obviously hot, and there's mm-hmm. And it's going to get it only gets worse as the summer goes on. And there's only one roof, one stadium with a roof there, and that's where the Diamondbacks play, Chase Field. So
that's right.
They could only stage so many games there a day. Like even if they did a triple header where they start in the morning and just kind of play three games a day at Chase Field, like that would probably be too much
brutal
baseball in one place. Yeah.
Yes,
and so that means that, so then you'd have teams, having to play probably early morning games just to beat the heat, sure. at their own stadiums. And, that could be, even that probably wouldn't be much better for them.
Is this also from a health expert perspective? This is the one, if I'm correct, kind of the concept that Dr. Fauci, he liked this concept because it was the best way to kind of quarantine the players and try and, we call it this bubble concept. It's the safest way. Is that the right way to explain it?
Yeah, that's definitely the right way to explain it. That's the one he's endorsed so far. I don't know if he would endorse any of the other ones, or if he plans to, or if he, you know, what he would think of them. But this one is definitely the one where, with the right protocol in place, like they could, the league could definitely have, and you know, public health officials, of course, could definitely have minimized that exposure to the virus.
So we go from the first plan, which we feel like the players are most in favor of, or mm-hmm. it gives them at least the most normal climate that they're accustomed to. And then the second plan probably makes most sense from a quarantine perspective, but presents a lot of challenges and not exactly the most ideal way of playing baseball. The final plan is host teams in Arizona, Texas, and Florida. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that one's the one that makes the least sense to me. So the first challenge is there's 30 teams and you're trying to base them in three states, which, you know, if you think of it logically, just put 10, 10, and 10, right? But there's a limited amount of ideal real estate in Texas that can be used for to house any number of teams there. You would probably want to have anywhere from 6 to 8 teams based in Texas, and then split the remaining teams between Arizona and Florida, which, you know, both of those places are equipped with spring training sites. So there's plenty of real estate to go around for every team. But that would leave a very unbalanced kind of division system if you have, you know, 6 to 8 in Arizona, or 6 to 8 in Texas, and then anywhere from 12 to 14 in Arizona or Florida. Then there's also the fact that both Texas and Florida have unpredictable weather, and that'll make it even tougher for teams to make sure that they can get it, or for baseball to make sure that they can get in all the games possible. Now this one, we're not really clear on how, like, how the league would deal with a quarantine aspect or an isolation aspect here. And that's kind of the same for the first plan too. But surely you can imagine that there would be a lot of they would have to, like, and because Texas and Florida have been two of the first states to reopen,
that's
I'm sure it'll be a bit of an uphill battle for mm-hmm. the league to convince players to follow extreme protocol to, you know, quarantine or isolate when other people around the area might not be doing that and might not be following those public health guidelines.
Maria Torres from the LA Times joining the Sliva Show. Maria, I'll ask this too, and you might not have an answer yet mm-hmm. when it comes to this, but what happens if an athlete or a manager or an umpire tested positive? Does the season stop? Does it pause? I mean, I've asked the same question on the NBA front, and I think that continues to be a question that nobody really has an answer to. Is it safe to say that baseball doesn't, at least they haven't mentioned anything that they have some sort of plan that if somebody did test positive, what happens from there?
No, that's a great question that no one seems to know the answer to right now. I'm sure that behind the scenes they're tossing around, like, what they would do, but you already mentioned the NBA. Obviously, you're familiar with that and the situation there with the Utah Jazz, and that's what set everything in motion 2 months ago now. And if the NBA shut down as soon as a player tested positive for it, you could imagine that every league that dealt with something like that would probably follow the same protocol, just to be safe and make sure that everyone, that there's no, you know, unnecessary contact. Granted, all of this is like speculation because we don't know what the proposals are or what the plans would be if such an instance were to occur. But at least in one of the things that's worrisome from a public health standpoint with any plan to proceed with a sports season right now is just the fact, especially baseball, there's the demographics in the sport are just so wide ranging. You have, you know, the youngest of the minor leaguers can be 16, and the oldest of the managers and, you know, front office people can be in their 80s, and you're not, and, you know, going to the special assistants for general managers, like, you've got people in their 80s and 90s. So the Angels have a manager who's 65 or 66. The Dodgers are a little bit, I guess, are younger on that end, but that doesn't mean that they don't have people within the, you know, the demographic that could be severely affected by any outbreak around them. So, you know, if it, whatever proposal the league comes up with, they'll definitely have to put safeguards in place to handle the exposure of, you know, the older population within the sport, and how, you know, how they would deal with any kind of situation.
Maria, great stuff. I appreciate you taking the time to join the show. Maria Torres, LA Times, MLB season startup, pros and cons of three most likely scenarios. Thank you for doing this, and great insight. All right.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Maria Torres right there from the LA Times. We got halftime coming up next. Got some good topics here. We'll look at some of our favorite storylines from The Last Dance so far, plus top 10 best cities for Mexican food. There's rankings out there, people. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, already an hour and a half in. Another hour left to go. By the way, just a quick reminder, tune in tomorrow morning. Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ starting things off at 6 a.m. Following them, the Sedano Show. Will Kane after that, Mason Ireland. I'll hop on at 6, do crosstalk, and then 6:30 to 9 all week long. We got the Sliwa Show. What's going on, fellas? How you guys doing?
What's going on, Alan? Doing good. Doing good for a Tuesday night. Good show.
Tuesday
so far.
Night. Tuesday night, Cinco de Mayo. Did you guys get some
Sliwa de Mayo?
I'll get into right, the best cities for Mexican food. But did you guys get some Mexican food tonight, or just today in general?
I made Mexican breakfast. I had huevos rancheros with some pico de gallo and some freshly made guacamole. I had the breakfast Mexican food.
That's the pronunciation, too. That's how you pronounce it.
Sí, señor.
How about you, Curtis?
No, I didn't have anything. No guacamole, no huevos rancheros.
Ay, no. That's
pico de gallo.
Curtis, why don't you get halftime started? What do you got over there?
All right. So 10 years of world peace has ended, guys. Meta World Peace has changed his last name, or his name again. So
wait, what?
Meta World Peace has changed his full name again. But so he got married.
Dog's not happy. Mad at that.
Dog
Curtis,
is
hey,
not happy
relax.
About this.
It's because there's no more. There's no more world peace.
I know. Mm-hmm. My dog is not happy about no more.
Okay, world. So give us the background for those who don't know.
Yeah, well, Meta got married recently, and he was on a podcast, I guess it was like Danny Green or something. Either
that's right.
Today
Danny Green
or
does
yesterday
that. Yep.
Or something. Mm-hmm. And he casually slipped out that he added his wife's last name to his. Mm-hmm. So his name now, but he kept the first part. So he's Meta Sandifer-Artest. So he kept Meta as his first name. He had his wife's last name first and then added Artest on the end of it. And then, yeah.
Ireland was saying yesterday that MT, I'm trying to think right off the top of my head, what was he saying about saying that that Meta World Peace, or that MT used to have, Michael Thompson would have when Meta World Peace was playing, you can't take peace out now. I forget what it was. I'm butchering it. Curtis, do you remember that yesterday when he was mentioning that in crosstalk?
No, I was off, so I completely tune out. When
oh
I'm
yeah,
not
that's
here.
Right. It was me and Funches.
Sorry, I couldn't bail you out on that one.
No. I listen, man. Meta is his own person. Like I love everything about Meta World Peace. By the way, his journey. Like, you know, how sometimes we talk about interesting athletes. How interesting of an athlete is Meta?
He's,
I mean,
interesting
from when,
with the capital I.
Listen to this. Like, from when he got drafted to his storyline. By the way, he's been very, very vocal about having. You know, his own issues, right? Like where he came from and kind of his background, it was almost looked down upon to go to a therapist to kind of like open up about your thoughts and your feelings. But now he does it no problem. But to take just kind of his backstory and then the obviously the brawl at in Detroit, and then eventually to win an NBA championship with the Lakers in 2010 against the Celtics. Like, I love me some Meta World Peace. That's an easy guy to root for.
Oh yeah, that's someone popping fireworks. Oh, there's another one. Charlie, relax. My dog's
Curtis,
all
what
alone,
are we? Basically. Curtis, what are we doing here? What
you know why it's his birthday today? That's what it is. He's
tuning off Sliwa with the Mayo fireworks.
They're going crazy at Jesse's house right now. Yeah, but Jess, I love Meta. I always did.
Yeah, his story is going to make a fantastic movie somewhere in the next
30
you know,
for 30. Let's do a
10,
30 for 30
years.
On Meta.
30 for 30, you know, one of the Jordan-like documentary or even a movie. But his life is amazing, and, you know, you grew to love him because mm-hmm. of the evolution you talked about. It was just, he was that guy no one liked. Like, he's a jerk. He's a this, the that. And then now
you go look on highlights, by the way. You go on YouTube and type Meta when he was with, like, Sacramento.
I mean, I hated when he was in Sacramento.
He looked like he was just looking for a fight. You know what I mean? Like, he just didn't look like he was all there. And then to have one of the most iconic moments in Lakers history, Meta World Peace is a part of that. You know, Meta hitting that three-pointer against the Celtics in Game 7 of the Finals. Kobe kind of, you know, as the shot is in the air, it's one of those where when you take the shot, you're like, that's a bad shot. And then it goes in, and you're like, that's a great shot. It's literally one of those moments which we're all accustomed to, either playing basketball or just watching basketball. He's a part of Lakers history. He really is.
My favorite.
He's a part of – I'll go for it, Curtis.
I was just saying my favorite Meta moment was when he elbowed James Harden. I think everyone was thankful to him for
that
one.
Was a great moment. I completely
wasn't feeling that. No, was not feeling that. I hated that. I thought Meta was like past all that. You know what I mean? Like, listen, I know.
Oh, James, that wasn't purpose, though. If you look back.
Oh, that was definitely
Artest
purposeful.
Artest was just excited. He's just like, you know. And it went through. It was bad play.
Jess, take the whole Laker part out of it. Was that on purpose or no? Be real. Was that on purpose or no?
I'm going to have to go back and watch the tape, but even then,
That's
I'll go back.
It's a pretty funny tape.
It is,
Curtis,
funny.
Was it purpose or no?
I'm sure there was a lapse in judgment there. I mean, well, everything you kind of did, there's always a
Artest,
little bit.
I got your back.
He went so far, like, he had gone so far to not just like cleaning up his image, but in a sense, cleaning up his image. So I wasn't a fan of that moment. I really was. He knocked out Harden. Like, he straight up just knocked out Harden in a playoff game. That was a playoff game, I think.
Was it?
I think it was a playoff game. Yeah, I think it was a playoff game.
What is playoff games?
It's something that we eventually will get back to. Another moment, one of my favorite Ron Artest moments. I got Wheaties!
Oh, yeah, that was great. That's great. That was another
one of my favorite Artest moments, yep. That post-game interview was fantastic after you won the championship.
Let me give you guys – I think you'll be a little surprised on this. So all you guys got to do, just throw out cities that you think. But there's a website that did the top 10 best cities for Mexican food. Okay, so the top 10 best cities for Mexican food. So let's see how many you guys can just name off. And this is just in no specific order, but you'll be surprised by some of these. So, Curtis, give me a city that you think – solid Mexican food. One of the best cities for Mexican food.
Well, I got to start with L.A., right?
Number one. So number one on their top 10 list, okay? Jesse, throw out a city that you think would be on this list.
I'm going to say El Paso, Texas.
Not El Paso, Texas, but definitely some cities in Texas. Curtis, throw out another one.
I have some family in Chicago, of all places. I hear there's a lot of Hispanic culture there, so I'll say Chicago as one, as a guess.
Would you have ever guessed that, Jess?
Chicago? I think I would have, because I remember listening to a podcast. Specifically, it was the Yo 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 podcast with Martin and Hooter. And they were talking about how Chicago, they go to
Chicago.
A place called the La Estrella Negra, the Black Star in Chicago, that has some pretty bomb, like, authentic Mexican food. So that I was actually going to save that for down the line. I was going to use some more on-the-nose kind of answers first. I think I would have guessed that because I remember that conversation.
If you told me, hey, what kind of food do you want to go get when you're in Chicago, right? You go get deep dish pizza. You'd go get those, you know, those famous dogs that they have, the hot dogs that they have. Like, there's certain things that you would think of. For me, Mexican food would never come to mind. Number two on the top 10 list.
Wow, number two.
I just know that because my abuela, who doesn't speak English or anything, has two brothers that moved from Mexico to Chicago specifically and are still there. So I know there's another city.
There's
up
something
there,
close,
but it's totally random. Doesn't make sense. But
you would think Italian food, like there's certain things that would hop out, but I wouldn't have thought Mexican. Yeah. Just throw out another city.
All right, let's see. San Diego.
San Diego, number seven on the list.
Number seven. Lucky number seven.
Curtis, give me another city.
I'll hit along Texas. We'll try and get the Texas one. San Antonio.
San Antonio is one of them. Three cities, by the way, in Texas, okay, that are in the top 10. San Antonio is number four. San Antonio is number four. Jess, you got another city in mind?
Let's see. I'm trying to think something. How about Phoenix, Arizona?
Phoenix is number 9 on the list, so that's another one that makes it. Give me another one, Curtis. I think none of us will get one of them, but go ahead. Keep going.
Houston.
Houston is number 6 on the list.
All right.
Give me one, Jess.
How about – I'm trying to think of a city in New Mexico, but the only city that I can think of in New Mexico is Roswell. So I'm going to say Roswell, New Mexico.
Actually, that's interesting. Albuquerque, nothing, huh?
Albuquerque, there we go.
No, but Albuquerque, nothing.
Wow. All right.
Do you know that last city in – do you guys know the last city in Texas? You guys have got two of them so far.
Oh, it's Houston.
All right, just said Houston.
Houston, no. He said. Houston and San Antonio, we already said.
Austin.
Austin, Texas is another one. Okay. Okay, there's another city in California. Do you know which one that is? Another city in California.
All right, is it like a sub-city of L.A.?
No. No. Huh. It's a big city. So we did San Diego, we did L.A.
Not San Francisco.
San Francisco, number 5.
Really? Huh.
I wouldn't think so. It's got a lot.
Yeah, I figured like maybe San Jose or like even like, you know, going a little forth, even like Bakersfield or Fresno, but not actually San Francisco.
San Francisco, number 5. Okay. One city, there's a couple in that area, but a prominent number 8, New York City. I didn't think New York City would be on the list. So there's only one city left that is on this top 10 list that we did not name off. So LA is number 1, Chicago 2, Austin, San Antonio, and Frisco round up the top 5. Houston, San Diego, New York, Phoenix is 6 through 9. And number 10, Raleigh, Durham. Number 10 on the list. I would have never guessed.
Durham,
North Carolina. So wow. The Daily
What's
Mail
up,
Rasta, did its
top North
10.
Carolina?
Yeah, I know. The Daily Mail did its top 10 best cities for Mexican food, and that's your top 10 right there.
That is I would not have guessed.
You want to know another weird city that I just not city, but at least state that I didn't expect off the, that I know off the top of my head because I also have family there, Michigan. For some
good
reason,
Mexican
really
food.
Out of nowhere. Yeah, there's a lot of I have some family out there too that went from Mexico straight to there. I don't know why they picked Michigan of all places. They went from one border to the other one. Yeah. So
there's there's a lot of Middle Eastern. You know, there's huge Middle Eastern. Just like literally a bunch of different. There's Catholics, Muslims, like you name it. There's a lot of Middle Eastern descent in Michigan, specifically in Detroit. And the Middle Eastern food, I mean, as authentic as it gets. So I don't know if you guys like Middle Eastern food, but there's – I mean, in L.A. too, there's great Middle Eastern food because of all the Armenians, but great Middle Eastern food in Michigan too. Jess, what do you got over there?
All right. So this past weekend was it 6 and 7, episode 6 and 7 of The Last Dance. One of the best moments from this weekend, I think the entire series so far, was the – I guess the debut of a blonde mullet wearing security guard who was betting with Michael Jordan. And if you don't really know what I'm talking about, I have that clip from that moment in the documentary.
I give y'all 4 tries to beat mine. 1 toss.
1 toss?
Yeah.
And 4 tries?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay. Put your money up first. I've seen it.
How much? $20?
Yep.
You can beat that.
4 tries. Come on back here. Give it.
Hey, CT.
Hey, your stuff rolls. You see how he just roll up there?
Watch this roll right in my pocket.
Watching MJ's money roll right into my pocket. He's the only person to ever beat Michael Jordan in the finals, Alan. John Michael Wozniak. He is now
that thing
a
took
legend.
Off, by the way. That thing took off with this guy.
I laugh so hard at that because I love seeing like that because those are the people, you know, like we have people like that at Staples Center that they're like, they're always there. It's the same people. They've been there for years they just
they
build this
everybody.
Repertoire. Yeah, they build this repertoire and I love seeing that. And, you know, he passed away in January, unfortunately, but, you know, he's forever going to be remembered because of that 30-second clip where he beat Michael Jordan at coin toss in a random room
pour
before
one out.
An NBA Finals game.
Yeah, bro, I don't know. I can't tell you guys how many times.
Throughout the 40.
From Sunday to now, I've seen that dude on Twitter.
You know what I mean?
He's like, a meme template now.
Yeah, that on Twitter so many different times.
I saw him on Reddit. That's when you know it's over.
Oh, yeah, with the Shorten drug? The Shorten shrug?
By the way, Nathan Bonning on Twitter, it was give peace a chance. So every time MT during a Laker game, when they take him out, he would say, give peace a chance.
So there's no more world peace now.
No, there's no more world peace.
So I was thinking about that. Clearly, Wozniak was like, oh, four tries for year one? Give me that all day. And he won. Now I want to ask you guys, when was the time? Same thing. You were confident you're going to win. However, you came up short. You talked all that talk, but you weren't able to come up with the walk.
You want to go first, Curtis?
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing, but
they're all embarrassing. Okay.
Those are the best kinds, right?
Don't worry.
It's a special holiday. I gotta do it on Sleep with a Mayo. So I think I was 16. Since you guys know, I live up north closer to Santa Barbara, so we have the Ventura County Fair every year. I think I was taking a girl to the fair, and I thought I had the one of the games figured out. I thought I knew how it was rigged. I was like, watch, check it out. And I just failed, and I spent like $20 and left with nothing, and I just looked like an idiot.
What was her reaction? What was her tell us the game. Like,
So I was told... Somewhere, I don't remember when, you know the milk bottle one?
Oh, yeah.
That there's one choice bottle or something that holds it all up, and you just got to find the right one, but it's some weird one. And I thought I had it figured out. And you get like three throws. Uh-huh. I think I just did like nine throws.
So what did you do, Curtis? I mean, did you walk in there like, hey, just watch this. I got this. I know how this works. Was it one of those moments?
Yeah. The problem is, anytime I talk something up, it always fails miserably like that.
Let me tell you something. How many times have I said this? And I have not, you know, sometimes you need to take your own advice. But one of the best things in life to do is to under-promise and over-deliver, right? Like whatever it is. And it's something small, but like I remember my dad back in the days when I first moved up to LA and I go down to San Diego to go see my fam, I would tell him like, all right, dad, I'll be home at 10, even though I know it was going to be like 10:30. And every time I get home, he's like, you know, why do you promise something you can't deliver? So from that point on, I'm like, screw it. I'll tell him I'm going to be there at 11 and I show up at 10:30. I look like a king, right? The under promise, over deliver. I think that's a perfect example when you're with that girl to be walking up there. And I've done it all the time too. I can't tell you guys, this is a perfect example too. I can't tell you how many times, like,
I haven't talked to that girl since, by the way.
That's okay. Don't worry. She's missing out. Curtis, I can't tell you how many times, like, this is a perfect example of you walk in overconfident and then you just, you know, you just kind of take it from there. I can't tell you how many times, I would have, like, over the years, right, doing Lakers talk, just doing just these shows, and, you know, you prep and you think like, oh my gosh, I'm coming in firing with a topic. LA's going to love this topic. Bro, you're like 1 minute, a minute and a half into it. I'm like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm doing. If somebody's on the road, they're probably sitting there like, hey, Al, what's your take on this, buddy? Like, you're going to get to the point? That's like, those are the perfect moments where you're sitting there and you're telling yourself like, oh, no, I got this. And then you go on and it's a complete freaking failure. So we all got him, Curtis. Don't worry about that. If you guys want, I could stay here till 11 o'clock talking about all those failures, but it is what it is. Jess, you got one?
Yeah, I got one that happened to me in Madden, mm-hmm, playing with my friends. Usually a lot of my stories end up in some form of video games. It was a couple months ago. It was, you know, I started a franchise with me and a couple of my friends. So we had this fantasy franchise in Madden where we each drafted and built our teams. And we're almost, you know, 10 years into it. We're like 8 years deep. It's 2026 in that year. We totally bypassed COVID-19. It was fantastic. And it was the NFC Championship game. I had just taken the lead. There was 5 seconds left in the game. I was ready to go to the Super Bowl. I was ready to, you know, play my other friend who had made it to the Super Bowl. I was pumped. I was talking smack. I was like, you got 5 seconds. I was beating him the whole game, like his off his receivers. Everything was rolling perfect for me until I kicked the ball with those 5 seconds left. He hit a Hail Mary. He beat my corner on a streak, and he won the game by a touchdown. And
You got too excited.
Oh man, it was me and my friends, specifically one of my friend Ruben. We have some pretty epic Madden games, and that was one of the more epic ones that
I've got those in basketball all day long. You know, you're playing pickup. That's one of the things that I was thinking about this a couple days ago. I'm like, damn, when's the last time anybody's played pickup ball? Like, what happens to pickup basketball? Like, does that go away? Like, does it go away, but how long until you can start playing pickup basketball? Do you know how many times it's 10-10 and you're telling the guy, hey, give me the ball. I got it. And game's up to 11 and you miss that shot. And then the other team comes down the other end and hits game point. It's 11-10. It's over. Now you got to go sit and wait for two games to get back on the court. That happens all the time too. We all got those moments.
I know. And whenever that moment comes, I'm like, yo, hey, I'm gonna pass you the ball. I ain't taking that shot. I don't want none of that. I don't want none of that smoke.
Yeah, next time you're passing the ball.
Oh, I know.
Are you wearing a headband or a shooter sleeve when you're balling up, Alan?
Shooter sleeve. Please tell me shooter sleeve. Be like Kobe.
No, none of that. None of that. You got to actually like that. That comes with preparation. My preparation is there a basketball there? Are we good? All right, cool. As long as I don't pull a hammy, let's get a couple games in.
Well, that's all you need. That's funny too. Also, in basketball, this happened to me 2 weeks ago in playing NBA 2K20 with my friend after the Last Dance. He was the 73 win Warriors, so the pre Durant Warriors, and I was the first year, the 91 Jordan Bulls with Jordan. And the game started, he was up 20-0. I couldn't hit anything. And he was hitting all his threes, and I wound up coming back, and I beat him by, like, 20 points. So that was his side of it, where I came out up top with Jordan. Jordan had, like, 60 points that game. It was fantastic.
Jordan did 35 in the first half in that game they were talking about against Portland on that last dance. By the way, just looking at the last dance real quick, what are some of your guys' your favorite storylines that have come out of the Last Dance so far? Is there a couple, Curtis, that stick out to you just from doing the Last Dance the last three weekends?
Yeah, well, because like I was all hyped on 1 and 2 because we've been talking about it for a week. So I watched the first two. I didn't catch 3 and 4, but I specifically made sure to catch this weekend just because of Kobe and all that. And
all right, you got to go back, by the way, and watch 3 and 4.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna watch it all.
That's the Dennis Rodman one too.
Yeah, I just made a point mm-hmm. to pay attention when it was the Kobe one. So, and that's been my favorite so far.
Yeah, listen, that Kobe moment. I was saying this yesterday. I was mentioning it, and I'll kind of continue to mention it. Why wouldn't you? I think that moment, that specific moment with Kobe, yeah, it's such a kind of a special moment for Laker fans to even see that, just to kind of hear Kobe. By the way, Kobe crediting 5 championships to the advice that Michael Jordan gave him. I don't know if we're going to top that moment from a Laker fan perspective, from an LA perspective, but I'll tell you a couple that stick out to me. How cool was that hearing that Nike story, that background of Michael Jordan wanting to go to Adidas, and then you got Converse that's representing Magic, Converse that's representing Larry Bird at the time, and then here's Michael Jordan. There's a company called Nike that puts their money into Jordan. And their projections were $3 million in the first 4 years. They sold $126 million in the first year. That's a badass story.
That was cool, because then you just – it's that ultimate what if. Like, you know, Adidas and Nike would have essentially like kind of flip-flopped. And it's crazy to think that now just because of how, you know, Nike is, you know, synonymous not only with Jordan, but it's like the global sports brand, you know.
Bro, I mean, listen, I don't think it's far-fetched to say that Jordan built Nike. You know, without Michael Jordan, maybe there is no Nike. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's unrealistic to say. I don't think that's unrealistic to say at all. Jess, give me what your favorite moment is so far in The Last Dance.
Aside from John Michael Wozniak, it's definitely the Kobe appearances, because it's, you know, you're cherishing all these moments you see, because they're recent. There's the most recent video and things we have. So I definitely cherish everything that, you know, he comes in. I like seeing all the Magic Johnson trash talk, just because you don't really see that from him nowadays. Mm-hmm. He's very, you know, oh, this and that. So hearing him talk trash, but in that same tone of voice, is always funny to me. And all the stuff with Isaiah, just because he can't escape it. And it's all because it happened with Jordan. Like we kind of talked about it a little bit. It's just he's living in Jordan's shadow, because if he would have walked off the court off any other team, we probably still wouldn't be talking about it. And it wouldn't be as polarizing as it is now.
It will. It's only going to get better. Still four more episodes left. So solid stuff, guys.
This weekend's got Mike and his stuff with his dad, right? That's what I heard Ramon talking about.
I think you're right on that. It's going to be good. So we'll let this storyline keep going. But what we do have coming up, and I know Jess and Curtis, I know you guys are both excited about this. Mark Machado, Mr. Cartoon, part of LA Originals on Netflix. He's coming up next. We'll get a chance to talk to him a little bit about the documentary, and then also just his life. We'll talk. It's a very interesting story from somebody that, you know, is born and raised, rooted right here in LA, and just to kind of watch his journey. It's fascinating stuff. So Mark Machado, Mr. Cartoon, is coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Very excited to have Mark Machado, a.k.a. Mr. Cartoon, part of LA Originals on Netflix. Mark, thanks for doing this, man. Thank you for joining the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, so tell us a little bit. I'd love to kind of just give the background of the documentary, how it came to life, where the idea came from. Can you give us a little background to it? I recently watched it, and obviously – you know, we wanted to bring you on the show, number one, because it's as LA as it gets. And number two, it's a great background. It's a great history. Can you tell us a little bit about the background of the documentary?
Sure. This documentary is about me and my best friend, Esteban Orio, who's a photographer that grew up here in LA. We met in our early 20s, and we figured out that we were both on the same mission or the same path, to elevate Chicano art and to document everything that was going around us and really just be peers in this community of lowriders, artists, musicians, photographers. And we wanted to kind of put our flag in the ground. And it wasn't really a giant take over the world concept when we started. We just wanted to be members in this movement, and we wanted to make sure our work was dope. I mean, it was important that we came correct with our work. And it was just years and years of doing it. And Esteban just started documenting it. He was like, man, this is crazy. I got to get this. And, you know, you're looking at about 25 years of footage over this movie. Shows us, you know, get older. Shows us, you know, we're kids starting out. And we're just two local LA kids that born and raised right here, and we're from Mexican descent, you know, our grandparents, and we went to the schools right here, and this is us. We took Southern California on tour around the world, and eventually it affected Hollywood and you know, rap music and hip hop culture.
Did you know, Mark, that this was a documentary that you guys were going to do? Like, when did the idea come together to say, hey, let's put all our footage together, let's put all our photos together, let's take these iconic shots with some of the most popular artists across the world, and let's put this all into one documentary and kind of tell our story? When did you guys decide that this was something that you guys wanted to do?
I think around 10 years ago, we decided we had enough footage to make a documentary. And we got real close to putting it out.
we had conversations with Lawrence Bender, who works with Tarantino, and we were talking to Brian Grazer. We ended up going with Brian Grazer, and the whole project got put on hold for 10 years. Wow. We ended up producing a movie called Lowriders that came out in the regular theaters, and it did very well. But we were more like producers on that and set designers and art department type stuff. But it was lightly based on my life. But it came out, it did good, but it didn't, you know, open up a whole bunch of stuff for us. And then after, you know, that 10 years, we were like, well, I think the time is now. And we started probably about a year and a half ago editing. So it took over a year to edit.
Mark Machado, a.k.a. Mr. Cartoon, part of L.A. Originals on Netflix, joining the Sliwa Show. So I was fascinated because, you know, to be real with you, Mark, I don't have this, you know, crazy background or history to understand the history of the lowrider or the history of just tattoos in general. You know, I don't have any tattoos, but I still find it fascinating to kind of watch this hour and a half documentary because it kind of tells a different story. You don't have to have a lowrider to appreciate the art of it. You don't have to have a tattoo to appreciate the art of the craft, you know? For you, what drew you to, let's just use those specifically, and I do want to go, because eventually some of the tattoos that you did do and some of the different artists that was involved in it, what drew you to those two specifically? Why did you become such a fan or an artist of those two?
Well, I think that, you know, just growing up in L.A., you can witness stuff and you can appreciate stuff, or you don't even have to be from L.A. Now with the internet, you're able to see all this cool stuff that maybe this niche crowd of people that you wouldn't normally see. I think people identify with it because of maybe the work ethic. They identify with the struggle, maybe. Taking an invisible idea in your head and manifesting it in life and having people be attracted to it. I think art can kind of like, people can look at it and they can have their own opinion about it and make them feel a certain way. So that was really powerful for me and growing up as an artist, that I had people that kind of dug it that didn't even have tattoos. It was just interesting to them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's when it starts to grow. I loved it because it was the lowbrow. It was the underground. It was the underdog's art form. It was like real macho artwork, you know, like graffiti and tattoos and old English lettering on a barbershop window, like a pub, you know, like something like hardcore like that. You know, Harley Davidson on a tank, you know, like it was a good transition for me, segue from being a graffiti writer to have to go get a job in the world. So I didn't think it was going to be as popular as it ended up being, but I just did it because I had to get a job, and I was way too lazy to do a regular, like, labor job, and I suck at sports, so I realized the NBA wasn't going to happen for me. So I stuck, but I was like, hey, maybe I could do a jersey for the NBA, you know? I could do tattoo a pro ball player, at least. And there's nothing worse than when I got to take a picture next to one of those guys. I got to get on a couple phone books and a milk crate, you know?
I'm with you, man. Don't worry. There's plenty of us that are on that that same boat. I want to, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, so watching the documentary, I thought it was just seeing, look, whether you were doing tattoos on Kobe or it was all the hip-hop artists, the Dr. Dre, 50 Cent, Eminem, Method Man, Beyonce, Justin Timberlake, you could just kind of go down the list, Snoop Dogg. Are there certain tattoos that, you know, stick out to you? You've done so many, and obviously your work is so well-respected and appreciated. But for you, are there a couple out there that you're like, yeah, that's one of my favorites? Is there a few that stand out to you that anytime somebody asks you what your favorite tattoo is that you've done that that stands out?
Yeah, a couple of them come to my head. I mean, when I think about just tattooing someone that you know all the lyrics to their music, it's weird. You know what I mean? Like you're just trying not to say nothing stupid, man. You're trying to be calm and just let's just get through this. Let's pick out what you like. Say Eminem. He came in and he got proof on his arm to in memory of his best friend proof that died. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, man, here's a guy
that's deep.
That, that yeah, everyone that's buying Eminem's like pitching him an idea or paying him their music. Here's his best friend that could probably, you know, that would tell him to go, you know, F himself or something like that, because mm-hmm. he's his homeboy, right? So when that guy died and he got his same tattoo that I did on Proof, he didn't put in memory of it. He just got the tattoo Proof got. And I was like, man, that's cool, man, because that's thinking out the box and dedicating a big piece of his arm to his boy. Mm. That'll never leave my brain, you know?
No, that's a great story. That's a fantastic story. And that's kind of what I was hoping for, too. I'm sure you've done so many of these, but there's certain ones that were maybe extremely meaningful to somebody else, and then it became meaningful to you. Mark Machado, Mr. Cartoon, part of LA Originals on Netflix. Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with Estevan and just why you guys clicked so well? Why was this a perfect partnership, perfect friendship?
You know, you don't come across people every day that maybe now people are way more open to these ideas, you know. Back then in the early 90s, people weren't thinking about going to Tokyo as much. People weren't involved in music industry stuff. And I started doing album covers for Eazy-E. I walked up to Eazy-E. I gave him my business card. I was real, real nervous. And he was, you know, he gave me an opportunity to do some logos and like tour merch and all that type of stuff. So overnight I was in the music business, and I found Estevan at a music industry party, and he was touring with House of Pain, this new band in Cypress Hill that's just come out. So we met on accident through a lowrider friend of ours. And we just clicked on the same vibe and had the same taste in like food, and we weren't scared to watch a foreign movie. And back then we used to go to like Virgin Record Store and buy foreign movies and stuff like that and watch them. So that gave us like an edge. It made us weird and made our brain a little more expanded.
Mark, you have a partnership with the Clippers. I want you to talk about that. And this is very unique. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm as big of a Laker fan as they come. And right. I think what you're doing, and this kind of just branching out, I'll talk about Nike too and the signature shoe that you have. But what has that meant to you that now all of a sudden you're with everything that you've accomplished, even to this day, you know, it's not slowing down, that you're continuing to try and find ways to evolve, and that you're a part of something that is LA. What does some of that mean to you? And you could feel free to tell us as much on that Clipper partnership as you'd like.
For sure. Thank you. Growing up in L.A., you're going to love the Lakers. You know what I mean? It's just a part of growing up here. I started doing work with the Kings, with the L.A. Kings, of trying to take their merch and putting a little NWA, a little DOC back in their brand, you know? Mm-hmm. And they let me – I did a Jonathan Quick. I did his helmet. And they started to let me do this cool merch and do, like, crazy starter caps and all that. And from that, that's where the Clippers came in, from doing the merch with those companies. And we had started to build a relationship and see the stuff come out in the Staples Center. And you could see people's vibe and what they push towards. And so doing the Clippers, yeah, they wanted to come with a different vibe of more of the underdog vibe of, you know, we over me. And they let me do what I wanted to do, man. I put a 64 Impala rag on the shirt. And it was more about, like, I'd rather be in a 64 Impala than in a jet plane, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was cool that they were down to do little things like that and let me use my fonts. And we built a whole capsule for it. And we did some outreach with it, where we talked to some, you know, young people and get them to the Nike stores. And that's a big part of what I do, and Estevan does too, is we do these mini seminars for free for kids to motivate them. I mean, firemen and police officers, they've been doing it for 50 years, you know, but we were like, man, they need to see some guys with tattoos. I take the shoes I designed for Nike and I'll put them out there and be like, hey, well, what's yours look like? You know, what's your, And I try to motivate them about becoming artists or just keeping an open mind.
What is, Mark, what would be your message to, you know, whether it be kids? By the way, it doesn't have to just be kids. It could be teenagers. It could be someone in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. I don't think age really matters. I think at any point in your life, you know, you can always hear from somebody that has a unique story. What is your message to those that listen and kind of want to have, I guess, what would Mark Machado's message be to those that, you know, are out there on the grind and trying to find ways to make it happen?
Yeah, I think that, you know, each person's situation is definitely unique, and you have to find stuff that works for you, and you have to be bendable. And I believe we are what we think about. You know, what you run through your brain every day is probably right. If you believe you can't do it, you probably can't. If you believe you absolutely must do it, then you probably will. So it's just kind of like I was brainwashed by my father. He used to play self-help tapes when I was a kid. Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale. These were tapes for salesmen. You know, my father never went to college or universities, but he was really interested in learning, and he would play Anthony Robbins or Wayne Dyer or stuff like that. And I would beg him to stop playing it, man. Please, let me play the radio. And he's like, no, you need to listen to this, son. You need to listen. And I would get really frustrated. And eventually I just tuned it out. But little by little, it was massaging my brain as I got older to tell me, you know what? Be careful what you think about, because it might happen. So be careful what you run through your brain. Run some empowering stuff. I mean, bad things show up in life, and this is a perfect time. Like, it's easy to be good when you just got a check in the mail. You're like, yeah, it's easy to be happy. Let's see what happens when that check doesn't show up or it bounces or something, or a pandemic shows up, and you have to be creative. You got to think how to make this work for you, and you got to be grateful for just the smallest things that we got. You know, this really puts things into perspective with all these people sick, their grandparents sick, their family members sick. So we got a pretty good, man, if we're just locked away in our cave, you know?
Mark, it's great insight, man. I love, by the way, that story about your dad playing those sales books and the Zig Ziglars. But I'll tell you, that was, I'm sure you look back at it now and be like, damn, there's some gold in there. And just that, you know, in itself, to just kind of have that as advice, that's fantastic. I'll leave you with this final question.
Thank you.
What's L.A. mean to you?
Los Angeles means to me is some of the best Mexican food in the world, the best weather in the world, laid back, kickback vibe. Even the LAPD is much cooler these days. You got a bunch of younger hip hop raised police officers that, man, they're way more chill than those 80s cops. So it's a real good time right now, minus the pandemic. It's a good time to be alive. It's a historic time to be alive. And in Los Angeles, I mean, if you can't make it here, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, it is literally, you want to open up a kiosk in the mall, you can do it tomorrow. You want to open up your own business, you can do it. You want to rub elbows with a celebrity, it's possible. So it's a lot of opportunity, and people come from all over the world to live here. And I see some of my homeboys that are born and raised just complaining about they can't get a break. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's happens sometimes too. I've been guilty of saying it. But you got to turn that back around and realize, man, this is the gold rush right here. We got it made just on the lottery of where we were born. So anywhere in the U.S., man, you're doing really good.
And Mark,
get a chance. Well, I was going to say, get a passport, go check out somewhere else. They got it going on over there too.
No, you're absolutely right. It kind of broadens your horizons too. But Mark, it's interesting. You know, I was like, you know, I was excited to have you on the show, and I didn't really know where the conversation was going to go. But it's exactly it's even better than I thought it was going to be. So congratulations on all your success. Wish you nothing but the best, and thank you for taking some time to join the show.
I'm grateful to be on here. I appreciate it, man. Much success.
All right, that's Mark Machado right there, Mr. Cartoon. What a cool story, huh? What a cool background. I want to talk more about this when we come back. Also, I don't know if you guys heard what Charles Barkley just recently said. So that's all coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, great stuff. Great stuff from Mark Machado, Mr. Cartoon, part of LA Originals on Netflix. You know, one of the things that I love most when you kind of hear stories like that, like this is somebody who's self-made, right? This is somebody that created his own path. There was no vision for him. Not that there was no vision. There was no roadmap that he could take. Sometimes you just got to make your own road. And man, I can't tell you how much I respect and I love stories like that. And Mark Machado, Mr. Cartoon, to kind of just go through his journey. I feel like that's such an authentic person that is going to always be real with you, and to just see where his life took him and where he is today and even what he's doing. Look, I was quick to mention him when he's doing some stuff, helping create some stuff with the Clippers. I was very quick to say, you know, I'm a Laker fan, right? But he's doing things that are on a corporate level, and he has his own shoe with Nike. What? But it still seems like one of those guys that wants to give back, you know, that giving back to the community. And by doing that, going and talking to some of these young students that, look, I came from where you came from, and you can create yourself a path, and you could do something that if you believe it, you can do it. I mean, how great is that? He's telling the stories of his dad. How smart is that of his dad to be just ingraining his son at a young age with these positive, you know, those positive books, those positive thinking books, that whatever you think, you actually become. That's a cool story. And that's a great background to have. So if you haven't got a chance to see LA Originals yet, go see LA Originals. Go see that documentary. Okay, so I'm on ESPN.com right now. One of the main stories, it says Charles Barkley doesn't see longtime riff of Michael Jordan ending. Seems like Michael definitely holds grudges if you think about his relationship with Isaiah Thomas. But his relationship with Barkley, here's what Barkley said. He was on, by the way, with Waddle and Sylvie. That's our ESPN show 1000 in Chicago. So that's the local sports radio station there. And he said on that show, the guy was like a brother to me. Shoot, 20-something years, at least 20-something years. And I feel sadness. But to me, he's still the greatest basketball player ever. I wish him nothing but the best. But there's nothing I can do about it. He goes on to say, I guess the rift is him saying something. The thing that bothered me the most about the whole thing, I don't think that I said anything that bad. I'm pretty sure I said, as much as I love Michael, until he stops hiring them kiss asses and his best friends, he's never going to be successful as a general manager. He's talking about his time in Charlotte. And I remember pretty much verbatim what I said. And the thing that really pissed me off about it later is Phil Jackson said the exact same thing. Look, I'm not going to sit here and spend an hour talking about another riff Michael Jordan has, but that is kind of interesting. You know, Charles Barkley, who he was a close friend with and obviously a competitor with for a number of years, no longer a relationship with. Isaiah Thomas, similar thing. Isaiah Thomas, we've heard the stories about Isaiah over the last 2 weeks. Yeah, they don't like each other. And Michael Jordan definitely doesn't like Isaiah Thomas. I don't know if that's, you know, part of the reason. These are some of the things that make these athletes so great. It's like that competitive nature. I mentioned it, I think, 5 times yesterday when I was doing Lakers talk, that I always felt like Jordan was finding a reason to get under his own skin. What do you mean Clyde Drexler's on the same level as me? Right now he uses that when he goes out in that game against the Portland Trailblazers. What do you mean Dan Marley's a good defender? Now he uses that in that final series against the Suns. The Olympics where they use Jerry Krause as somebody personal, that he's going after Tony Kukoc. So that always seemed to be a Michael Jordan, probably what also made him so great. Remember his Hall of Fame speech? His Hall of Fame speech, all he did was spend time talking about those who didn't believe in him, those who didn't think he was going to come out to be as great as he was. Maybe that's what made Michael Jordan so great. He can make up these stories that got under his own skin, and then eventually he becomes the great that he is. All right, quick reminder, tomorrow, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will take you from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Sedano after that, Vaughn Sedano, Will Cain Show, and then Mason and Ireland from 3 to 6:30. I'll join Mason and Ireland starting at 6 o'clock, and then the Sliwa Show. By the way, not just tomorrow, the rest of the week from 6:30 to 9 o'clock. If you miss any part of the show, you can catch it on the ESPN app. Thank you, LA. Have a great night.